there as a governor, consider all the people as your fellowmen. Either they are your brother in faith or your brother, we can say, in general.
When it comes to human rights,
yes,
I think this is one of the, I mean, a shining sentence in human rights. Mm-hmm. When it comes to human rights, we pay attention to the fact that we need to honor other people because they are either like us in faith or in creation. No other law in human rights can be greater than this. Or when it comes to the letters of Imam Ali alayhi salam to his enemies like Muawiyah, the way that Imam Ali alayhi salam in his letters has some instructions about war and peace, and the way he's teaching his soldiers how to behave regarding the enemy, regarding those who are taken as prisoners, like regarding women, children, even regarding environment, and so on and so forth. There are so many lessons to be taken from the sermons, letters, and short sayings of Imam Hadi alayhi salam when it comes to those people in power.
Yes.
Especially as you beautifully mentioned the letter of Imam alayhi salam to Malik al-Ashtar.
Yes.
The letter of Imam alayhi salam to his son Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam. The will of Imam Hadi alayhi salam. There are some famous sermons of the Prophet of Imam alayhi salam, like Sheikh Shaqiyah, like that of Hammam or Muttaqin, and so on and so forth. I believe that...
Especially the aphorisms, the short sentences, because nowadays the people are looking for quotations and the quotes, you know, to change them into posters or clipboards or something like that, you know, full of lessons. Some of them are really outstanding. That's right. Okay. Also, Ibn Abil Hadid, the outstanding, Mu'tazili writer, has written an explanation on Nahjul Balagha, you know, and... it is really fascinating that even the non-Shias and the non-Muslims become interested in such a book, you know, the peak of eloquence, Nahjul Balagha. Okay, that's all right. We hope that the people who are not familiar with the Arabic or the Persian language, also they can refer to the English translation, which is available in English language. So many commentaries and interpretations are written on Nahjul Balagha. Thank you much, Sheikh. It was very kind of you. I really enjoyed talking to you regarding the status of Nahjul Balagha and why is it called the Akhul Quran or the brother of the Holy Quran. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
The rise of Mohammed bin Salman as the Saudi crown prince in June 2017 marked an abrasive shift of behavior in the kingdom's foreign policy. The brute force behind the Yemen war was now the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia. The same month, bin Salman became the crown prince. He has spearheaded the blockade campaign against its small neighbor Qatar. But that was not the end of the young prince's adventurism in the region. He wanted to flex his muscles against Iran, the kingdom's biggest rival in the region. While a direct confrontation with Tehran was a political suicide, bin Salman opted for a media war. The same year, a media network by the name of Iran International was established in London. An Al Arabiya channel by nature, Iran International's mission was clear, waging a smear campaign against Iran.
There are Saudi intellectuals and journalists jailed.
In October 2018, The Guardian published an article titled Concern Over UK-Based Iranian TV Channel's Links to Saudi Arabia, casting doubt on the editorial independence of Iran International. According to the article, bin Salman, who many believe is responsible for the murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi, was the force behind the channel. The channel's gonzo journalism even drew the ire of Iranian political dissidents and opposition groups. Shahram Homayoun, a dissident and the owner of Channel One, a Persian satellite TV station based in Los Angeles. By many accounts, Saud al-Qahtani, the crown prince's information czar, who was among two senior officials removed in connection with the Khashoggi affair, was involved in the funding behind Iran International TV. Ironically, Saudi Arabia shows zero tolerance for criticism of its absolute monarchy, as underlined by Khashoggi's murder. It is setting up media organizations in other languages promoting free speech, particularly about Iran. Back in August, Salma al-Shihab, a Saudi woman, was given 34 years prison sentence for using Twitter. In the summer of 2018, almost a year after its launch, Iran International came under fire for airing extensive live coverage of a rally by the terrorist group of Mujahideen Khal organization that seeks regime change in Iran and has strong links to Saudi Arabia. It was not a blunder or a bad decision, but at the core of the channel's editorial policy to give airtime to Iran's sworn enemies. Shortly after, in September 2018, the channel gave airtime to yet another terrorist group to praise one of the deadliest terrorist attacks in Iran, in which the shooters killed dozens of people, including soldiers and civilian bystanders of a military parade. As a channel which runs no commercial advertising, Iran International reportedly received $250 million in funding from Saudi Arabia. The question is, why should the kingdom give this huge amount of money to a channel in London? In a recent leaked document, BBC Persian TV's senior presenter says the ultimate goal of Saudi-backed Iran International is advocating secession of Iran's provinces. Over the recent unrest in Iran, Saudi Arabia has tried to stir up chaos in the country through the distorted lens of its puppet channel. In the words of Professor Mohammad Mirandi of the University of Tehran, Iran International spreads rumors, ethnic and sectarian strife, and tries to use misinformation to create fear, chaos, and promote violence. The channel has been at the forefront of spreading misinformation and disinformation in the name of covering news in Iran. Azadeh Moaveni, associate professor of journalism at New York University, described the channel this way. Iran International is one of the most pernicious and damaging forces to enter the Iranian media sphere. It's an arm of Saudi foreign policy. I would not describe Iran International as pro-reform or organically Iranian in any manner. Giving a voice to terrorist groups has become the distinguishing feature of this Saudi channel that bears inappropriately the name of Iran. In just 50 days since the start of unrest, the channel invited 25 terrorists and secessionists for more than 120 times,
among them Abdullah Mohtadi, the leader and secretary general of the so-called Kamala Party of Iranian Kurdistan, and Mostafa Hijri, the leader of the so-called Democratic Party of Iranian Kurdistan, two separatists for whom the end justifies the means. The two are responsible for sporadic attacks against Iranian civilians in the western parts of Iran. Dictated by Riyadh, the media outlet naively seeks to topple the Islamic Republic by motivating the Generation Z of Iran to rise up against the establishment. One survey published by Tehran Times shows that almost half of what has been said by Iran International has had no foundation. In recent weeks, Iran has seen an all-out war on air and online. Rumors and fake news spread so quickly that often there is not much room left for the truth. This media project, sponsored by Saudi petrodollars, is trying to do to Iran what it did to Libya and Syria in the heat of the so-called Arab Spring, instigating disturbances against the government by pumping fake news, encouraging vandalism and violent behavior, and turning chaos to civil war and regime change if possible. It's not hyperbole to call the media war against Iran as bin Salman's most dangerous gamble. The crown prince already has a lot on his plate. The bloody war in Yemen, which has wasted the kingdom's money and energy for years without any clear outcome, the shaky ties with Washington, and an increasing public pressure from inside the kingdom, to name but a few. Poking Tehran would be the last thing bin Salman needed if he really wanted peace in the Persian Gulf. Iran's strategic patience is definitely not infinite, and the prince will rue the day if he doesn't rethink his regional policy.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a question and examining a question which is often asked, and that is a question regarding the extent to which Satan tries to misguide a human being. Some people often think that this is limited to a person's life, and at the time of death, Satan doesn't make any attempt to misguide a human being. But this is something that is contrary to what we read in the religious texts, such as the Quran and the Hadith. For example, we have a certain Hadith which says, in which Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, when the time of death approaches for one of our followers, meaning one of the Shias, Satan, he comes from his from the right of this person, this follower of this Shia, and from the left. He comes from the right of this from the left of this person, and he tries to misguide this person as far as this person's beliefs are concerned. Meaning, he tries to make him disbelieve in, you know, these verities and truths that he believed in previously. Then Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, however, God Almighty prevents him from doing so, prevents this person from becoming misguided at the hands of Satan. Then Imam Sadiq said, this is the meaning of the words of God Almighty in the Holy Quran, where he said, يُثَبِّتُ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا بِالْقَوْلِ الثَّابِتِ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ. God Almighty, he firmly establishes, he strengthens those who have faith in the life of this world and in the hereafter. And by means of the firm word or the firm belief, meaning he, in essence, what this verse wants to say is that God Almighty strengthens the true beliefs of this person in this world and in the hereafter. Also, Imam Sadiq also said the following: there is no human being except that at the time of death, the Satan sends one of his emissaries to him in order to deceive him, in order to whisper some evil insinuations in his ear, in order to make that person doubt in his religion, and finally, to lead him towards disbelief. This insinuation, this deception, or this treachery continues until the spirit of this person leaves his body. If the person is a believer, Satan will be unable to take away his faith from him. So then Imam Salik said, if one of you should be in the presence of somebody who's about to die, then you should recite the Shahadatain to him so that the Satan can leave him. This blessed tradition has been mentioned in the Kafi, the famous book of traditions, and it's a, you know, authentic tradition, and it indicates the fact that, I guess, Satan attempts to misguide man until the moments of his death. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the extent of Satan's attempt to misguide man in the light of the Quran and Hadith. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The energy crisis in Europe has become the most important topic in the Western media. According to economists, the European economy is severely going into recession and industry is also under heavy pressure. People in the European Union countries are grappling with a soaring cost of living crisis, and food bank usage is rising at an unprecedented rate. We take a look at some of the world press and news agencies' coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Russia Today tells us more. More than 60% of people in each of seven Western European countries examined by YouGov say that their government is doing badly at managing the cost of living. Large majorities have been forced to cut their household spending and expect the trend to continue. The countries analysed in the YouGov survey include Britain, Italy, Germany, Spain, France, Sweden and Denmark. The most widespread dissatisfaction was expressed by British and Italian respondents. About 82% in the two countries assessed their respective government's attempt at cost control negatively, with just 10% and 13% saying leaders were doing well. Also, while 65% and 62% in Sweden and Denmark respectively were unhappy, 27% in both countries said the governments are doing a good job at dealing with the cost of living crisis. The YouGov survey said No fewer than 80% of people in each country have either made cuts or believe that they will have to do so, rising as high as 93% in Italy. Some 41% of the Italian public also state that in the last 3 months they have always or most of the time struggled to afford their energy bills. YouGov noted that incoming Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni will have to act quickly to resolve the matter. Moving to Britain, YouGov's September survey indicates the vast majority of the British public also disapprove of the Cabinet's new economic plans. At the moment, 72% of respondents thought that abolishing the top rate of tax was the wrong priority at the present time. Energy and living costs in Europe have increased dramatically amid the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Speaking at the Russian Energy Week Forum on Wednesday, 12th of October, Russian President Vladimir Putin pointed out that EU authorities shouldn't blame Russia for growing energy bills at home. Putin remarked, "Ordinary Europeans suffer. Their electricity and gas bills have more than tripled in 1 year. The population, just like in the Middle Ages, has begun to stockpile firewood for the winter." Meanwhile, the local website reported that Germany's September inflation rate broke into the double digits for the first time in decades, marking the first month since summer's 9 euro nationwide public transport ticket and fuel discount ended. September saw big increases in prices for energy and foodstuffs in particular. Compared to September of 2021, energy overall was 43.9% more expensive last month. Both gas and heating oil prices doubled. Meanwhile, food prices have gone up around 20%, with dairy and eggs seeing even higher increases at 30%. In the meantime, German sentiment about the prosperity of the economy has declined, with only around half of those surveyed for the Ipsos National Wealth Index satisfied with the current state of the German economy. That number is also lower in eastern Germany and in Berlin, where just 45% report feeling satisfied. While around half of Western Germans are confident that they can set aside money for their future, only 37% of eastern Germans share that opinion. A YouGov survey released on Thursday, 13th of October, also finds that 25% of Germans are now making only enough to meet their monthly costs, and therefore cannot save any money. 10% say their household budgets have already been overwhelmed by rising living costs. The British newspaper The Guardian has more on this. Official data showed Britain's economy shrank by 0.3% in August compared to July, hit by a slump in manufacturing and by maintenance work that slowed the oil and gas sector. Giving a strong signal that the United Kingdom is entering a recession, the Office for National Statistics, ONS, said manufacturing declined by 1.6%, while the cost of living crisis appeared to hit hotels, restaurants, and the leisure industry. A Reuters opinion poll of economists had pointed to zero growth in the month of August rather than a 0.3% decline. The decline in national income, or gross domestic product GDP, was also 0.3% over the 3 months to August, indicating that the increase of 0.1% in July was a blip and mostly caused by a modest rebound from the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations. A rise in house building activity offset a decline in maintenance to leave the construction sector 0.4% larger. However, the much larger services sector shrank by 0.1% as a result of cuts to health service spending. Output fell by 5% in the arts, entertainment and recreation sector and by 1.8% in the food and accommodation services sector. A reduction in spending by the government related to the coronavirus pandemic was also one of the big causes of the slump in manufacturing sector, which was hit by pharmaceutical companies cutting back production. The British government blamed the global situation for the decline, and especially the war between Russia and Ukraine, which has sharply increased energy costs. Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, said the gross domestic product figures showed the economy was in a dire state for which the government should take responsibility. She said mortgage costs are soaring, leaving families worrying about making ends meet. Borrowing costs are up, living standards are down, and we are forecast to have the lowest growth in the G7 over the next 2 years. Charlie Bean, a former Bank of England deputy governor, said the economy was sliding towards stagnation. Speaking on BBC Radio, Charlie Bean added that the contraction was likely to be short-lived if the government pressed ahead with a large injection of extra money into the economy in the form of tax cuts and financial assistance with energy bills as outlined in the mini-budget. The pound, meanwhile, dropped in value and pushed up the cost of borrowing. In only 3 weeks, the cost of a 2-year fixed-rate mortgage has increased sharply to more than 6%. Also, the European Union Statistical Office said on Friday, 14th of October, Eurozone trade balance saw a record high deficit of 50.9 billion euros in August due to soaring costs of imported energy. Eurostat data showed the trade gap widened from 33.9 billion euros in July, while it worsened from a trade surplus of 2.8 billion euros in August of 2021.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions, and issues parents have regarding Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified family. Today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Sister Rehana Kazemi. She has done Bachelor's of Science in Applied Psychology. She's a researcher in the Hafsa Ilmi of Qom, and her research right now is on best trainers and coaches for students in non-Islamic countries with Islamic perspective. A very warm welcome, sister, and assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you very much.
Well, sister, we talked about one of the very important questions from a parent in our previous episode, wherein a father was saying that my wife is used to buying expensive things for a child because she says, I love my child, I have to get him this thing anyway. But you said that's not the correct thing because a child does not understand expenses. He does not understand the price tags. The thing that he understands is love,
your love. Yes.
And care. Now, what do you say about the channels which advertise these toys all the time, especially in the UK?
Yeah. I already told you the media is playing a major role in these days. So that's the duty of the parents, to keep an eye which channel is their children are watching. So that's the first thing, because every parent, especially in UK, is not able to buy these expensive toys, because the children has no need to know about that, how expensive is this. They will just play once or twice or thrice, and they will just throw the toy. And what about the money you have spent on this toy? Because the children need to play. They do not think that this toy is for £10, or this toy is for £20, or this toy is for £70.
You remind me of my mistake that I did once. My son was asking me to buy him a robot, and my husband was telling me, don't buy him. He's going to break his legs right now in just 15 minutes. I promise you that. Yeah. And I told him, no, since my son wants it, I want to buy it. And I bought him, and he did exactly the same what my husband told me. Interestingly, I tell you, hey, what my son was telling me after breaking the leg of the robot, he was telling me, I never told you to buy me expensive things. Yeah, I mean, a child who is as young as 6 years old is telling me, I never told you to buy me expensive things. I just needed something, and you got and bought the most expensive thing from the toy shop. Yeah.
That's the duty of the parents, that they tell their children, these are the toys, they are in the same categories, but this is that price, that's £10, that's £15, that's £20, but they act same. You can play in the same way with these toys. But I think that's much better, because after this toy, you will be able to buy another toy. And if you buy this toy in £20, maybe you could not get the toy after 6 months.
All right.
You are not be able to buy a toy. And if you buy a toy of £1, after a week, you will be able to buy a new toy. So in that time, children are more interested to buy new toys. They are more interested to collect the new toys. They are not interested in expensive toys. And these channels, they just doing advertise. They are getting monies from these toy production. The toy makers are making these toys. They are getting money from them. They are advertising them. Their channel is running with these like money, and they do not care about the parents. This is the duty of the parents to tell the children, this channel is only, they are getting money from these toy maker.
All right.
But these toys are same. There is no difference between these toys. So that's parents' duty to tell their children what is the difference between the expensive and inexpensive toy.
All right.
Cheap and expensive is like playing equal.
All right. We'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm a sister, Rehana Kazemi, and we're discussing about, shall we buy expensive toys or not? Shall we avoid buying expensive toys? Well, sister, you gave us very, very interesting tips. You said that a child does not understand what is expensive and what is inexpensive. What he understands is your love, is your care. And in case you get trapped in a situation wherein you have to buy, then try to give him reasons. If I buy the cheap one, you will be able to get more in the coming months, in the recent months. But if we buy a very expensive toy right now, you will not be getting some toys in some for some more time. You have to wait for a long time.
And try to play with them. Do not let your children to spend too much time with toys. Try to play board games with them if they are grow up, or if they are young children, you can play with them hide and seek. You can play with them what they want to play. The parents, the most important thing is parents' love.
Okay.
And they are the different way to show your love. And you can show your love with playing. You can, if you think that this is the way of love to buy expensive toys, this is a very wrong thinking. Because the child will fed up after one hour, after half an hour, he will fed up this.
He will get fed up in some days.
Yes, definitely. But love is something.
He will never get fed up.
He will never get fed up.
Wow. That's
so
beautiful.
You need to show your love and try to play with your children. Because when you give the attention to your child, he will never like say about the toy. He will forget what
or,
I was saying.
Or like that, the things that we said in the previous episode, he won't develop the bad behaviors we want to
and
avoid.
And if you will keep on going with the expensive toys and buying this and that, some others like they will fill up the children's room with toys. Definitely, they are developing a bad behavior. They are telling their children that always go in the market and buy.
You should be demanding.
Yes.
You should be demanding. You can't be a adjusting person in your life. All right.
And also tell them if you have a toy to share with the other children. This is a sharing is a caring.
Sharing and caring.
Yeah.
All right. So sharing is caring. That's something you got to tell your children if you have good financial situation and you're able to buy a lot of things, but there are so many around who are not in a very good position even to teach their children. So buying toys is very...
And Islam also tell them, care about the other people's.
Yeah.
And this way, because the child is so small, he could not understand these things. So this is a quite simple sentence. When you teach the child, he will definitely pick it up. Because that's the children's behavior. They doesn't like that someone take his toy or her toy from her. When you will say, oh, you are such a good boy. Sharing is a caring.
Okay.
Give your toy to your sister. Definitely, he will, because you are cheering up your child. When you cheer
you
up the child...
You're preparing him. You're not just ordering him to...
Yes.
You know, just share.
And
I
just
want you to share.
When after he or she share the toy, so give him a smile or give him a kiss. Oh, good boy. You are a very kind person. So in this way, you are developing two habits in
at
your
the same
child.
Time.
Kindness and sharing.
Generosity.
Yes, generosity. And he will always like to share his things with those people who does not have these things.
All right. Thank you so much, sister. We'll get back to you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam said, Allah will write a reward for he who kisses his child, and Allah will bring happiness on Judgment Day to he who makes his child happy.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Sister Rehana Kazemi, and we're discussing the expensive things and inexpensive things, what things to buy for your child. Well, sister, you said that the most expensive thing a parent can give to a child is his time, is his love, not the expensive toys or the expensive stuff he can buy for a child. Now, how can a parent give quality time who is busy? But what is quality time, basically? What is the time you say quality time with a child?
These days, mobile phone is a big problem. Even though when a family is doing a dinner, when you are sitting in a family gathering, you are using your phone. And when your child look at you and you are using your phone, he will get angry. And he will
feel dejected.
Yes, definitely. And the quality time, I will say, when you are fully with your heart and your brain, you are spending time with your child. You are listening him and he is listening you. And you are just developing good habits with him. Do not think about your work. Do not think about your mobile. Do not think about your activities. Yes, you are playing with your child. That's the quality time. Because this time is very precious. And this time, it goes so quickly. When they grow up, then you realize, oh my God, where this time gone? When they were a child. You will definitely miss this time when they grow up. So try to spend quality time. Just leave everything what you are doing and just listen to your child and he will listen to you. If you are busy on your phone and you are listening and your child is saying, Dad, today this happened, and you need to understand that he wants to tell you something. When children want to tell you something, listen carefully. Do not neglect them. If you are busy, leave everything and listen them carefully. These days, parents are so busy, they do not listen to their children. And this creates the stress. This creates an anxiety in their children. And this lose the self-confidence. And after that, the children will try to find other ways because they know that the parents are not listening to them. Often I heard from the children, oh, what shall I do, teacher? When I was talking to my dad, he was busy with his phone. So do not be busy with your phone, your tabs. Try to keep these things away and listen to your child carefully and fully. So when they want to talk to you, there are something the children want to tell you. Maybe for you, these things are not, at the moment, these are not important, what they are telling or what they are talking about.
But ultimately, these things are going to develop important behaviors in your child.
But afterward, they will affect on their behavior.
Well, so to sum it up, you're trying to say that do not just give a hearing to your child, give a listening ear to your child. Listen with heart and be with them. Get involved in the discussions and make them feel as if you are exactly listening, not hearing to them.
And if you will listen them now, they will listen you when you will old.
When you get old. All right. So you will have a tit for tat policy over here. Thank you so much, sister, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Stay tuned for extra interesting episodes on IRIB English Radio. If you have any questions, dear audiences, comments or suggestions, please contact us on englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on the social media websites just by searching Call of Islam Radio. You can also listen to our programs on our official website, that's www.parstoday.com. Until another program, fi amanillah and God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
At approximately 2:27 this morning, San Francisco police officers were dispatched to the residence of Speaker Nancy Pelosi regarding an A-priority well-being check. When the officers arrived on scene, they encountered an adult male and Mr. Pelosi's husband, Paul. Our officers observed Mr. Pelosi and the suspect both holding a hammer. The suspect pulled the hammer away from Mr. Pelosi and violently assaulted him with it. Our officers immediately tackled the suspect, disarmed him, took him into custody, requested emergency backup, and rendered medical aid. The suspect has been identified as 42-year-old David DePepe.
The assault came less than 2 weeks before midterm elections, in which control of the House and the Senate is at stake, raising fears about political violence.
The news reports indicate it was intended to be an attack on the house Nancy Pelosi lives in, the third ranking person in the United States in line to be president. You know, it's reported that the same chant was used by this guy they have in custody that was used on January 6th in the attack on the U.S. Capitol. I'm not making this up. This has been reported. I can't guarantee it. I can tell you what's being reported. The chant was, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" This is despicable. There's no place in America. There's too much violence, political violence, too much hatred.
Donald Trump, who's still the de facto leader of the Republican Party, didn't fully condemn the attack on Paul Pelosi. In an interview on Spanish-language Americano media, he called the attack a terrible thing and then quickly connected it to Republican criticisms of the rising crime in U.S. cities. At the same time, Trump himself is being blamed for fostering a dangerous political climate, not least for insisting on stolen votes in the last presidential election in the country.
I ran twice. I won twice. I did much better the second time than I did the first, getting millions and millions of more votes in 2020 than we did in 2016, and likewise getting more votes than any sitting president in the history of our country, as I said. And now we might just have to do it again. I think you're going to be very happy. I think you'll be very happy.
Americans are now sharply divided along partisan lines over their trust in the federal election system, according to a new Politico Morning Consult poll coming days ahead of midterm elections.
Our biggest threat remains the sick, sinister, and evil people from within our country. But no matter how big or powerful the corrupt radical left Democrats that we are fighting against may be, you must never forget this nation does not belong to them. This nation belongs to you. This nation belongs to you.
The gulf between the two after the attack highlighted the country's internal political estrangement ahead of the midterm elections.
And I want to take a moment just to say a prayer for a friend of mine, Mr. Paul Pelosi, who was attacked. A politics where some in office or who aspire to office work to stir up division, to make folks as angry and as afraid of one another for their own advantage.
Republicans remained unwilling to upset their voters by being more critical of the extremism running through the GOP base. That's while Democrats were trying to link rising threats against lawmakers and their families with Trump's political movement as spiraling inflation threatens to deal them a heavy defeat at the ballot box.
Inflation is through the roof. You gotta decide between medication and food.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Everything going up, but shit, you can't spend. You go to the store with $10, $20, you ain't come out with one bag. You know, you really can't win.
The Pelosi attack has kindled already fraught debate over the repercussions of political speech, particularly in the wake of last year's attack on the U.S. Capitol.
I did talk with Speaker Pelosi this morning, and I mean, this was an act of extreme violence, and I think we're looking at a time in our country where there is so much discourse that is fueled by hate and division. And anyone who professes to be a leader, I think, has to really understand the meaning and the impact of their words and their posture on things like this. I pray for Paul's recovery. I know the Pelosi's, and this is tragic. Somebody literally broke into their home saying, "Where's Nancy?" And I strongly believe that we all, each one of us, have to speak out against hate. We have to speak out against violence, obviously. and speak to our better selves. There's absolutely room, and it is important to have public discourse when there are disagreements about policy. But what we've been seeing recently is so base in terms of the reducing it down to something that I think is beneath the dignity and the intelligence of the American people.
While Democratic leaders were quick to condemn the attack, Republican leaders increasingly minimized its severity or turned a blind eye. In some cases, they even made jokes about the assault. For example, Donald Trump Jr. shared an image on social media of a hammer and a pair of underwear with the words, "Got my Paul Pelosi Halloween costume ready." Election denialism, the growth of QAnon and Donald Trump, cult people that love our country, have already divided the American nations. Furthermore, a belief that un-American cadres have captured the government, cultural institutions, and businesses acts to spur Trump's followers and a sizable minority of votes to conclude that dire steps are required.
Sadly, there is a huge influence from between, I would say, the far-right communities and extremist communities such as QAnon to the mainstream politics. We'll just take the example, for instance, what happened after the Mar-a-Lago raid, where Trump was pretty much calling the FBI as the people that is coming after him, that it is just part of a much larger conspiracy theory. And then immediately you saw plots to attack the FBI, and one of them actually was already at the FBI headquarters in Ohio trying to carry out an attack.
The language that Republican officials use show contempt for state authority, including law enforcement, a pervasive distrust of the objective news media, a perception that America is in grave peril, and a growing acceptance of conspiracy theories and white supremacist sentiments.
We know this. January 6th last year wasn't an insurrection. No one has been charged with insurrection. No one has been charged with treason. But it very well may have been a Fed-surrection. We are very concerned that we have sent letter after letter to Attorney General Garland and FBI Director Wray to simply get to the bottom of unexplained circumstances.
My question is this: why is this Congress obsessed with itself and cares nothing about the American people? This is a two-tiered justice system that should never exist in our country, and I'm fed up with it, and so are Americans all over the country.
To add fuel to the fire, Democrats' economic policies have not resulted in tangible benefits, such as helping with medical bills, building new bridges, or trying to keep jobs from going offshore.
This will be what they're doing right now, the biggest tax hike in the history of our country, the exact opposite of what I did, and they're working feverishly to pile on more regulations at levels never seen before.
A YouGov poll carried out a few months ago indicated over 40% of Americans think civil war is at least somewhat likely within the next decade. And with political violence now rising to the surface, things aren't looking gloomy for the Americans. America's politics is so toxic that it quickly turned the Pelosi attack into the latest vicious partisan fight, even before the full facts are known. Is the U.S. a tinderbox? We'll just have to wait and see.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.